Running Wild with Christine, Sex, Success, and Other Slippery Rabbit Holes. Welcome to episode 66. We are back with Steph Otiri. Hi, Steph.
Hello there, everyone.
Oh my gosh, the last time Steph was on the podcast was over a year ago. Which we're both highly uncomfortable about. For those of you guys who want to go back, it's episode 21, which just tells you how long ago that was. And Steph, you were just getting ready to publish A Dirty Word, your book.
That's right. It happened. It actually happened. Holy it did publish.
Yeah, it did. And I remember you were like freaking out about like the first people that read it and going to speak with Emily Nagoski at your book opening and all this crap. So how was it?
Well, Lord, that was, I mean, it was super cool and really exhausting, and I'm an introvert. So that whole first month, there was so much putting myself out there that I felt afterwards that I wanted to just go to sleep for a year. And I mean, I basically did, but I had some really great moments. Like you said, talking with Emily Nagoski, who came out for my event, and I was like, what? You're my hero. And she was amazing, as I knew she would be. And like doing one of my first events at my yoga studio, which was a lot of fun. I mean, going to a college sexual health fairs and having that experience of sharing resources with students. I mean, a lot of good moments. Exhausting, but a lot of good stuff in there.
Yeah. What was the most surprising thing of that first sort of like crazy hype? Like, is there something that you just didn't see coming that like blindsided you a bit?
God, you know, I just, aside from how flipping tired I was, This is such a downer. So I was...
Go.
Let me start off by bringing us all way down. So, I went to a conference a few weeks ago. It's a conference I go to every year, Hippo Camp. It's a creative nonfiction conference, and I love it. And one of the guys there that I met last year, he asked me, so now that your book is out, how has your life changed? And I feel like he was trying to be like, oh... everything is amazing now, and you know, being a writer is so much easier, and I feel like a superstar or whatever. I don't know what he was expecting, but what I said to him was, this was so terrible, but I was like, oh well, I feel like there's a giant hole in my life now, which is the most depressing thing to say, but I mean, yeah. I have been working on the book for 7 or so years.
Yeah.
It was the big goal that I was working toward. My two big goals were to get this book published, or any book, but this book I had been working on specifically, and, you know, to become a mother. And I achieved those two goals, and I was like, what now? Do I just do nothing for the rest of my life?
Oh, yeah. And I remember, actually, we talked about this on the episode. We were like, oh, my God, like, post-baby blues is going to be such a thing with the book. And it is.
Yes, it hit me hard. How did it feel for you?
Same. I feel like it was exciting. Like, that first whirlwind of just, like, this is my book. Everybody, my book. Yeah. Book, book, book. And then you're just like, oh, okay. So I've, like, shouted and yelled.
Mm-hmm.
Now what?
Like, now I retire.
And it was super weird. Did this happen to you? Or like people were just like, oh, congratulations. Are you writing another one? And you were just like,
oh, well.
I just did this. Like, this, shut up.
Well, my least favorite question was, how is the book doing? How are sales going?
Oh, and, I hate that.
And meanwhile, I just did not. I wanted to know as little as possible. I mean, this could be irresponsible of me, but I wanted to know as little as possible about book sales, because I felt like what was really fantastic, well, my goal had been get this book out there so it could connect with the people who need it. And so for me, the more important thing was hearing from people who had read the book and hearing them react to it in such a positive way. To me, that was more important than how sales may or may not be going, and I still don't know.
You still don't know?
I mean, clearly I have not yet received any royalty checks, so still don't know.
Well, I know because I self-published, so I obviously I'm the one keeping track. But
right.
But it's so true. Like I kept saying, like, first, well, before I even cared about how many I sold, right? Not that that's the bottom line, but I mean it's in the back of your brain. I was always like, it's hard to get it to people. Mm-hmm. Once it gets to people, I'm happy with the way that they're reacting.
Right, exactly.
That's what matters. So for me, when people are like, how's the book doing? I'm like, I'm stoked. Like, 4 people liked it. That's fine by me, you know? Like,
yeah, yeah.
And the people that didn't like it were actually not like, I hate this. They were just like, this is uncomfortable, which, mm-hmm. again, I'm happy with that reaction.
Valid.
That works for me. Did my job, if you're
right, right.
But yeah, it's just like super weird. There's this like continuous like, so how's it going? What are you doing? What's next? Blah, blah, blah. And you're just like, chill, yeah. Dude. I've just like birthed this giant.
Yeah.
I need time to recover. Mm-hmm. And also, like, yeah, giant big hole. Totally relate.
Yeah.
Yeah. A fun conversation starter for some reason. But do you, I know you were worried, like, because your mom had just read it, and there was, like,
right.
Was there other people that were, that came back to you after reading it, or they came back to you saying, like, I'm not going to read it?
Like, my brother and his wife have my book, you know, on their coffee table in their living room, and they're like, yeah, we have no plans on reading this, but here we are supporting you. And that was a few people, family and friends of the family. They bought the book to support me, but they're like, yeah, we're gonna just not read this, just gonna not do it.
You're
and
right.
My sister-in-law actually had me mark which chapters it would be safe for her to read because she did not want to read about sexy times between me and her brother.
Fair.
So fair. You know, I understand that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to either.
I think it's really funny, that reaction. And I think it's interesting because how you're writing, or like how you're, at least what I'm getting from what you're posting and what you're talking about, how it's shifted from mm-hmm. like the story that you needed to tell, the story mm-hmm. of, you know, the sex writer who was bad at sex, like that's your
right.
tagline. To now, like, this huge shift to sex ed and,
right.
you know, the implications of the conclusions of your book. Do you feel like that's completely, like, do you feel that in publishing the book, you've actually closed the chapter on, like, the story that you needed to tell that was your personal story? Do you actually feel like that's, like, now with a pretty bow on it and you're like, ah, I did this, or not?
I mean, absolutely. The story itself, of course, hasn't ended personally.
No, 'cause you're alive.
I mean, it's still always going to be a thing
yeah,
that I grapple with in my life, but no one else has to hear about it anymore. They've all heard enough. And yeah, I feel so before we sold A Dirty Word, when, you know, all the rejections were pouring in, lovely, lovely rejections. My agent and I were like, okay, well, we need to think about what else we might want to work on if this doesn't find a home. And at the time, I had some loose ideas for something I wanted to do around sex education. And, you know, in the whole time when my book was coming out and when I was going out to promote it, that didn't change for me at all. So I feel that since the book came out, I've been trying to figure out, okay, what can I do with this sex ed thing in a way that makes sense? But I felt like I was forcing it.
Because
I was like, oh my God, my agent will think I'm lame and that she shouldn't have invested time in me because I don't already have another book ready for her, or like a proposal or anything.
Yeah.
So I kept trying to force this proposal to happen, and it was just getting messier and messier and messier. And I wasn't writing anything else or pitching anything else. I was coasting along on my editing job. And oh God. So I'm going to admit this. I picked up Julia Cameron's The Artist's Way.
Yeah, did you?
So, I mean, I had tried to read it in the past,
yeah.
and it had been too hippy dippy for me. I mean, everyone had been like, The Artist's Way, yay!
Morning pages!
So, I picked it up again out of desperation, and I started doing Morning Pages. I ended up closing the book after I got to the chapter on taking a break from reading, and I was like, no. And then I closed the book and I put it away. But before that point, I've been able to use the writing pages to think about what else I could do to find fulfillment in my life again, since, again, this big hole with here. I didn't know what to do with the sex ed. So I started finding all of these other creative outlets that were completely unrelated to writing. That's at first.
Yeah, your ukulele.
Oh, I started learning the ukulele. I'm such a cliche. I started to play the ukulele, and I joined a women's choir. They sing resistance songs, so it's the first time I had been singing with a group again in 5 or so years, so nice. That was great. And I started getting back to my yoga practice. So I started doing everything but writing.
Yeah, fair.
At the same time, I had, shortly after my book come out, applied to a writing residency. And you have to put together an entire application with a plan, a proposal for what you're going to work on when you're there.
Yeah.
So I had, you know, written out this proposal for this sex ed thing.
Yeah.
And then I was accepted to the residency.
And you were like, fuck.
And I was like, fuck. I was like, I'm going to fail a residency. Is it possible to fail a residency? So
you tell us.
I went to the residency and it was fantastic. It was a fantastic experience. I was away from my family for a week, which is the longest I've ever been away from my family.
I like how you segued those. It was a fantastic experience. I was away from my family.
Exactly.
For a week.
No, I am the type of I don't travel a lot. I am not a traveler like you.
Yeah.
But I do like to travel without my family. That is the true vacation from them. I had this great routine while I was there. I was waking up early in the morning. I was walking to the beach. I was doing water aerobics with the local polar bear club.
Amazing.
And then I would like get like a giant apple fritter as big as my head, and I'd eat that on my way back to the house. And then I would work for 3 uninterrupted hours at the house.
Amazing.
And it was, yes, it was amazing.
It sounds like,
but like I kept writing new versions and new versions and new versions of this book proposal, and it was turning into even more of a hot mess. And I left the residency a little bit more confused than when I had even started. But then I split everything up into 2 different possible projects, and I brought it to my critique group, which I meet with weekly. And then I became even more confused.
Because they were like, no.
Because they were like, yeah, but then they were like, but. And it was just not right yet. It was just never right. And then I thought back to the college sexual health fair I had gone to.
Yeah.
And how rewarding it had been to share resources with them that they didn't have access to, and how exciting that was and how good it felt.
Yeah.
So I knew, it became clearer to me that I didn't necessarily have to write a book, that this project could take a different form.
Yeah.
So now I have 2 projects that I'm just about to dive into. I have 1 project that is not necessarily writing, and another project which is maybe a proposal for a book that's more historical, still centered around sex education. And we'll see what happens.
Nice. What's the non-writing one?
I would like, well, have you read Handbook for a Post-Row America?
No, I have not.
It's by journalist Robin Marty, and it's this fantastic resource for those who are like, holy shit, things are going down, shit's going down right now, what can we do?
Yeah.
And it provides a lot of great context before diving into the resource, the resources that do exist for people. And then there's a companion website. But what I want to do, because I know that information can get so stale, is to create a web portal that I can constantly be updating, containing resources for those who either want to advocate for better sexuality education within their school districts, or who want to find other
school districts
resources for sex education outside of the traditional school system.
Oh, that's awesome. Kind of like what your website and like resources from your book was sort of central to.
Because after the book came out, I was like, I wish I could just continue updating the appendix forever because it's one of my favorite parts. It was one of my favorite things to put together for the book. And I love stuff like that. I love appendices. They get me excited. Appendices. So I want to create a living appendix for sex ed.
I wish you guys could see Steph's face when she's saying this. She's just like, I know how dorky this sounds, and I fully embrace it.
Felt excited about appendices, yes.
No, but I think it's really interesting because I read this article that you wrote recently about parenting your five-year-old from a sex ed perspective. Where did that article come from? Like in your head, like how did it come to be?
Was that the one in Creative Nonfiction, I think? Maybe.
It was When They Start Asking Questions.
Yeah, so that ran in the literary magazine Creative Nonfiction, which I've been trying to break into for years. And I was like, well, if I can't get into the sex issue, then who am I even? But it's just, I mean, it comes from the fact that here I am, writing about sex for a living, and I still feel completely unprepared for my daughter's questions, which, because I'm surrounded by this stuff all day, the toys and the samples and the everything, I mean, she would have questions anyway, just by observing my body. Yeah. But even more questions come up, and I'm like, okay, what is appropriate to share with her? What's it too soon for? How much information can I give her? And, you know, how's this going to affect her going forward? I mean, she's going to have all this information that maybe her peers don't have. What will happen when their parents find out that she's perhaps sharing information? Are my fears for her going to make her afraid, more afraid than I want her to be? I mean, so many things going through my head.
Did you watch Sex Education, the Netflix show?
I started watching it, yeah.
I was just like, it just came straight to my brain.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a fun show.
Are you like, that's one god, that's going to be my daughter.
That is going to be her. That's going to be her. But it's like, even though I've been reporting on sex education focused on sex education for a number of years now, I mean, since I was pregnant, I still don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Yeah.
I have like 5 books on my shelf on how to talk to your child about sex from birth on, and I still feel like I'm winging it.
Well, I think there is no right answer, so you'll always feel like you're winging it.
Well, right. Right.
There's no like right or wrong way to do it. Like there's no, like everyone is different and therefore.
Well, right. Right. I mean, when we convey this information to our kids, we're also conveying our own values, and all of us have differing values around sexuality.
Yeah. Do you, we were kind of talking about that on the last episode of like how it like, how is it going to be when she realizes what her mom wrote kind of thing? But, like, it's actually an ongoing thing where you're just like, well, like, I'm not going to hide what I do.
Right.
And also, I think you would benefit from this information.
Right.
But how do I do this?
And I can't feel bad if she's sharing this information with others because she should.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, that's where a lot of kids are getting their information anyway, from their peers.
Yeah.
And usually the information they receive from their peers can be questionable.
I bet.
Well, if she's actually giving people good information, then good, damn it.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. Like, I think it was funny just this morning. I'm, like, waking up and scrolling through Instagram trying to, like, kick off my brain, which is the wrong way to do it, but whatever. It's the way that I did this morning. And this one post came up and it was like, we need to start using vulva so that the, you know, stigma and the shame around using those words. I think it was Anita Cassidy, who was on the podcast twice. She wrote that her kids from small would say gina, like just remembered the sound.
But it
of
sounds
gina.
So cute.
Yeah.
It does sound
but
so
she
cute.
Was like, it's a work in progress to constantly use the right words so that it's just a word.
Right.
Because it is just,
I mean, for her, vulva is totally just a word.
Yeah. But that's how it should be. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
If they're sharing the word, hey, this is a vulva, like, what's so upsetting about that?
Right.
And if you're upset right. about that, you should really question yourself.
Yeah. I mean, for those who don't want comprehensive sexuality, I mean, a lot of it has to do, I mean, on both sides, it has to do with fear.
Yeah.
And I wrote a piece about this, The Moral Panic Behind Sex Ed. It ran on The Establishment.
Nice.
Rest in peace. Because The Establishment had to fold, and that makes me very sad.
Yeah.
But, you know, I am driven by the fear that she'll enter into these situations she's unprepared for. But meanwhile, other parents are afraid that learning about sex is basically permission to just start diving into the sexy sex.
Yeah.
Like, here, you can do it now, clearly, because I'm giving you, I'm acknowledging that it exists.
As if they weren't going to do it anyway.
Well, right. I mean, yes.
Yeah, we're
going to. I mean, but on both sides. Both sides are motivated by fear.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting that it's the conversation is still framed that way, because we spend our time, and obviously this is within my bubble of my socioeconomic and political and philosophical circles, mm-hmm. but, like, where I find myself a lot of the time being like, holy crap, this new generation is so much better than us at everything.
Yeah.
At talking, at thinking about the world, at, mm-hmm. you know, just coming together for things that matter. Like, they're just really on fucking point. Mm-hmm. And so we're just not giving anyone the credits to be like, yes, I trust you with this information.
Right.
You will do how you feel is right with this information. I think it's interesting that the fears are centered still around a way of like, ooh, if I tell you, then you might have tools.
And I mean, this has always been the case. The book proposal I'm working on, the historical piece, I started researching the social hygiene movement, which is around, you know, when sex ed first came to be, sex ed as we know it today. And I started diving into a lot of those old journals that existed, the academic journals that existed around the social hygiene movement and around sexuality and around education. And some of the content I read around, oh, well, sex ed could be good because of this, but it could be bad because of this, and everyone's still fighting because of this and this. Like, it could have appeared in any academic journal from the past week.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same. Nothing has changed.
Yeah. And I think it's really interesting because last week on the podcast, I had a conversation about the implications of religion and mm-hmm. sexuality and everything. And I think that moral question is still, like, so very much inside the way that we frame everything sex ed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, sort of like, I don't know, at this point, like, I saw this meme on Instagram the other day that was like, oh, I used to think girls that were slutty were insecure and now I realize they're just horny. I was like, oh, yes, because it's like hungry. It's the same.
Right.
Like,
right, right.
So we're still assigning, like, moral benefit or detriment to a bodily function.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much, yeah. There.
Which is super odd to me. Like, I'm just like, like... But
I mean, it's wrapped up in ideas of the family and propriety,
contraception,
and morals, values.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's also why the question of, like, am I doing this right? Is just never going to be like, yes, you got this. Keep going. You know, it's never going to be that clear.
Right.
Unfortunately.
No. Screw up all the time.
So your kids went off to kindergarten today for the first time?
She her first day was Wednesday.
Wednesday.
And previously she had been going to a preschool for half days. And it was this tiny little preschool that was very intimate, very small group of kids who she's still friends with. And they were all in another town, so none of them are in her elementary school. None of them are in her kindergarten. So she was like, I don't want a new school. I don't don't want new friends. But she slowly warmed up to it over the course of the summer. Plus, I think she's sick of us. I mean, both of us work from home, and then she has to entertain herself all by her lonesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we walked. Her backpack is, like, larger than her torso. Could you see her walk into the school and following the line of kids and looking back at us? And I'm like, I forgot to bring my sunglasses. I usually bring my sunglasses to these sorts of things so I can cry behind them.
But you were exposed.
But totally. It was like, I didn't think to bring the sunglasses because it was a cloudy day. And then I was like, damn it. Another mother next to me put on her sunglasses and made a comment like that she was planning to cry behind them. And I was like, no, I forgot them.
Do you think this is going to make it harder to talk about the stuff with her? Do you think she's going to come back with more questions?
Oh my God. I don't know if...
Sorry, I just gave you a whole new anxiety.
See what? I don't know how soon the questions will start coming. But what concerns me is that even when information is not explicitly about sexuality, there's these gender norms that we're conditioned to slot ourselves into. I mean, from the beginning, from before kindergarten, but I feel like once you're within that larger, lumped into that larger group, it's even more difficult to escape. And those are the things that eventually lead to the dynamics between people later on when they enter into intimate relationships.
Yeah. Good time.
So woo.
Do you what kind of like area is she in? Do you think that the sort of gender conversation is going to be super on the menu, or do you think that it's a little more conservative and it's going to be not talked about as much as it is everywhere right now?
Let me think about that. I mean, it's been amazing already how even when she was in preschool, the who played with whom was already so gendered. And she was like, I don't play with the boys because they're wild. And I'm like, you're wild. What the hell? One time I brought her to Drag Queen Story Hour or Story Time or whatever it's called. You know, they're going on all over the place. And I was like, you know, I'd like to give her another example of a non-gender conforming example. Cause at the point she was like in the thick of I'm a princess and princesses only wear dresses and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I must wear my princess shoes everywhere and I cannot play with boys. So we're at this Drag Queen Story Hour and another little boy seems like he wants to play with her.
Yeah.
We're all like, it's like outdoors and another little boy wants to play with her. And he's like, he's a boy. I'm not going to play with him. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Here we are with the drag queen doing the thing, providing an alternative model for what can be.
Yeah.
And you're going to tell me that you're not going to play with the boy because he's a boy and you're a girl? No.
Aww.
What am I like? How is it already so terrible? Like, how?
It's so hard because it's everywhere.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. And it's like, don't play with the boy if you don't like him as a person.
Well, right. But not because he's a boy. Yeah. That can't be the only reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
God.
I mean, she seems like a not at all stubborn and totally fully formed person whatsoever.
My God. Oh my God.
At least you won't have to worry that she'll fold to social pressure.
Oh man.
That's hilarious. But yeah, no, I think it must be so hard. Like I can't even like begin to imagine. Like parenting always seemed like the hardest thing ever to me. And now it just seems just that much harder. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, as long as I just acknowledge that I don't know what I'm doing, but nevertheless, things will probably turn out okay.
Yeah.
As long as that
stays in your mind,
then I can then I can be okay with how things are going.
So in terms of the resources that you want to provide, is that sort of also on the agenda, or is it like, what, how are you framing the sort of resources that you want to provide on your platform that you want to create?
Oh my God.
I've just got like really pointy questions. You know me, this has never been the fluffy question corner.
I mean, I put together a document the other day that was all the things that must be done.
And I like how it's like, a document and not a post-it.
It's a document. Where the hell is it? I've lost the document. No. And it's about all the things I want to do on that portal and all the things I want to do around that portal. But I have a whole huge list of different types of resources I want to be able to include on this site, including sources of really great comprehensive sex ed or sex educator training programs or alternative sources of sex ed. Like, I have a really long list, a bulleted list of the types of resources that I will not, you know, read out the entire thing now. But I'm hoping that, I'm hoping to create an intuitive site that's easily searchable by first of all, by state.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it's hard because it's not even just by state that sex ed is different for people. It's by district. It's by district, and every district decides what in hell
you can
they want to do, what they want to provide their students with. But I can at the very least show people what is available within their state if they find. And then some things can be more general. It doesn't need to be geographically based. It can be like, oh, here are some scripts you can use when you're, you know, preparing a presentation for the next Board of Education meeting and you want to talk about why maybe this curriculum is better than that one.
Yeah.
That's like, I want it to be something that provides these general pieces of information, but also, you know,
pointed specific
things stuff that people could do locally if they need it.
In regards to the handbook for Postro America, like how do you find that, you know, recent Georgia and Alabama developments? Yes, your favorite topic, I'm sure.
Because
you're on the East Coast, so it's like we're on the West Coast, it's like those people out there for us. You
right. know what I mean? I mean, but I'm like in an area where I still feel lucky and privileged and I have so many resources around me. But as I see all of those resources shrinking for people, and I assume they're going to continue shrinking. I mean, every time I see a new piece of news come out about how people are losing access to these resources, I feel like it can't get worse now, but at the same time, I know that it will.
Yeah.
And it's numbing.
Yeah.
Which is a dangerous feeling. It's dangerous to feel numb to every single new piece of news, because then you also feel hopeless, you feel helpless, and you feel like, well, what's the point in trying to do anything about it?
Yeah, it is totally, like, it's the apathy piece is, like, huge, because you're just like, but at the same time, it comes from being overwhelmed. Like, it comes from being like, how is this even a thing that I have to deal with? Like, I can't.
Right.
It was like,
I mean, to see Planned Parenthood leave Title X funding.
Yeah.
I mean, we know why they did so. But at the same time, making that decision affects so many people.
Yeah.
It affects so many people's access, and it affects mostly marginalized, low-income populations.
Yeah.
And that is shitty as hell.
Yeah. It really is. And I think it's just a state of, like you were saying, like I think we might have touched on this in the last episode, but you and I have certainly talked about it, whether it was on the air or not, I can't remember. But like the backlash of like coming a few steps ahead and being like, we're finally talking about this, to like, puritanical backlash of just like, take this shit away from you now. You've gone too far.
Yeah. Like, and it feels like we see all these terrible things happening. And even if we can manage to reverse things, we'll still be feeling the repercussions of this for a long time, like progress going back in the other direction is going to be so slow.
Yeah.
And that's infuriating.
It is, especially when you think of like the way that any of those big legal changes have happened. It's like you have, you know, it sort of was like a, I did this horrible thing to myself yesterday where I read,
oh,
I read this person that I was friends with on Facebook,
mm-hmm.
which I should have known from the beginning, but I guess
no, just no. If it's on Facebook, then this can only be terrible.
Oh, it was terrible. It was like a Brexit, like Brexiteer's status with what's happening in England, and I was just like, oh, I should have known you were one of them. but I read like the comments of like her friends and then people who were on the Remain side, which obviously mm-hmm. is where I would be if I was English. And it was just kind of like this insane thing where I was like, you are not at all thinking about this from the big picture.
Right.
Like, there was no mention of, like, the hard border in Ireland and, like, all of this other things. She was like, oh, they're not listening to the vote of the people. And I was just like, oh, my God. Like, I unfriended her right after that. But I still was like, you know, it paralleled really with this conversation of, like, medical abortions. Like, all of this stuff that is just not being considered in your stupid moral argument or your people's vote, quote unquote. Where you're just not, like, it's coming from this place of privilege that is
right.
so blinding that you're just like,
oh, right.
you have no idea what this entails.
I feel like, and getting into these conversations can't help but, I mean, it can't help but feel so adversarial.
It does.
I mean, I went to this sex ed conference a few years ago where I attended this workshop on coming to consensus. It was like the consensus process, and it was a very interesting session, and it sounded fantastic, and it's all well and good to have this process in place in which people can come to a consensus over contentious topics. But in the day-to-day, if people aren't open on a casual level
yeah.
to seeing each other's points of view,
yeah.
then how are... I mean, it's hard to put into practice.
No, that's the thing. And I was really stunned by reading, you know, one of the girls that was engaging in her post that was like, you know that we disagree and we stand on different sides of this issue. And mm-hmm. she was still trying so hard to have a conversation about, you know, have you thought about this? Or,
right.
or no one's talking about this. Or just like, yeah, bringing this awareness forward. And I was like super impressed by whoever this person is that I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But... Yay.
Kudos to that.
Yay, human. But it just, like you're saying, on the day-to-day, it's so difficult, even if you spend your time being like, the us versus them mentality is what is mm-hmm. wrong and is what is at the core of, like, othering issues that are actually human issues at the base and, like, bringing us to a place where no one's talking to anyone and we live in alternate realities.
mm-hmm.
But on a day-to-day, it's so fucking hard.
It's hard, especially when it's people who are in your life on a regular basis. And it's not like they're going to not be in your life. And you don't want to make it so that they're not in your life.
Yeah.
I mean, I was having a conversation at a family gathering.
I was sensing the family issue coming.
And we won't go deeply into it. But this family member started talking about something on which I was clearly going to disagree with. And I just didn't want to get into it, so I literally put up my hand and was like, listen, this conversation is not going to go the way that anyone wants it to go, so why don't we table it?
Yeah.
Was, you know, it's...
It's a tough one.
It's tough because you don't want to not say something.
Yeah.
You don't want to engage or avoid engaging over the issues, but at the same time, you don't want to damage certain relationships.
But it's brutal because, like, ultimately that is what we should be doing, like,
right.
on a bigger scale, and we mm-hmm. intellectually know that that is what we should be doing.
Right.
However, practically and humanly, it's still, like, really complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I still, every time I have to tell my dad to recycle, lose my shit. You know what I mean? It's like... I like recycling. I'm like, this is not even contentious. Like, Just fucking recycle. What's wrong with you?
Oh my God. I was reading an e-galley for Lindy West's new forthcoming book, The Witches Are Coming.
Yeah.
And she has an essay in there on, you know, the end of the world because of climate change, basically.
Yeah. Fair.
And it was terrifying.
Impending.
And I'm like, how are people still not seeing this? But yeah, no. Yeah.
No. And I literally, like, remember this, like, screaming match at a restaurant with my dad being like, your kids are in their 30s or 20s with my brother. You don't have to worry about oxygen in 50 years. That's my problem, right? Like, fuck you. It was infuriating because, you know, it's sort of like when that article came out that was like, a lot of straight men don't recycle because they think it makes them look gay. I was just like, I don't even know where to begin with this.
Yeah, no, reading that essay, it made me think, I had to sit back and think, like, was I stupid to bring a child into the world?
But, like, childless me over here who wants children is like, is this a big mistake?
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, it's very doomsday thought, but it's hard not to be very doomsday-y.
Right. Just another thing to be afraid of on behalf of my daughter.
Yeah.
That's what motherhood is, after all. Being afraid all the time.
Did you watch this segment on The Daily Show that came out, like, this week? That was...
No.
It was just, like, a comedy skit. It's on his Instagram. He had... Oh, I can't remember who the comedian is, but basically they were like, let's make guns gay.
Oh, boy.
It's fucking funny. I'll put in the description because it was just like...
Okay, I was just writing it down so I could Google it later.
Oh, yeah. It was like, we don't need to, like, have new gun laws. We just need to dissuade straight white cis men from owning guns by making them gay. And it was like something
That's
like...
It's brilliant.
It was like, and after all, most of them are long and hard and the best ones are black. And I was like, yes.
Oh, my. Fantastic.
Like, more, please. But, yeah, it's the same. Like, it's like, he was like, let's just channel the same toxic masculinity that prevents white men from recycling into guns.
Like, brilliant.
Dude, so good. But brilliant. At this point, you need to laugh about it. Because what else are you going to do?
I will laugh and cry simultaneously.
Yeah, I can't even. I can totally see how motherhood is just like fear at all times. I mean, I'm sure I'm making you feel much better right now.
So much better.
Happy you've had this conversation.
No. I've always been neurotic around motherhood. I mean, I'm on the one hand, I seem very laid back, but on the other hand, I'm like, oh my God, here's another way for my child to die. You know?
I mean, I read your book, so.
But you know, you already know that I'm neurotic.
And
a helicopter mom.
I relate not to the mom, but to the neurotic. very much so. Are you excited now that you have all this time, or is it scary now that she's in kindergarten?
I feel like I want even more time because now that nearly a year is passed and all these ideas are finally coming together, I want all the time in the world to work on them and because I want to make them happen now. They require a lot of startup research and web building and all this stuff. And on top of, you know, the book proposal and the web portal that I want to make happen. I'm also planning a conference.
Ooh.
So as a member of the Women's Fire Choir, I went to a community singing workshop run by this woman who founded a local organization that provides music therapy to survivors of domestic violence and sexual violence.
Wow.
And I was like, this woman's amazing. This organization's mission is amazing. The next day I emailed her and I was like, let me work with you in any capacity at all. In some way, just give me a way.
Amazing.
And she took a look at what I do and she's like, let's plan a conference together, a sexual health conference for survivors of sexual violence who are having trouble, you know, like who have been processing all the mental, the emotional shit that happens with that. but really want to get back to a place where they can enjoy their bodies again.
Yeah.
Which is something that's, you know, not talked about a lot.
Yeah.
Pleasure. Well, I mean, in anything, with sex ed from the beginning, with trauma survivors, pleasure is not, does not come onto the table very often.
That's true. I feel like, I feel like you guys would be the perfect people to do that.
So we're in the beginning stages of planning that. So I feel like I have suddenly, after a year of nothing, I have like these three big things that I'm trying to make happen. And I'm like, what?
But that's amazing. That's
can I quit my job just to work on these things? But then I will have no money.
Yes, I was gonna say that is the dream, but not yet.
That's right.
Or maybe just check your book sales. Like, you never know.
Let me bump up my promotion a little bit, because that's what's gonna get me all the big bucks. It's more book sales
is the way to go to get rich. I like how we're like delusions. It's good times. when is the actual anniversary of your book? I forgot now.
October. I need to actually look at a calendar.
Oh my gosh.
I'm gonna bring up the Amazon page right now.
I like how this is like a big day, and she's like, oh.
I'm like, whatever. It was October and everything after that is a blur. It was October 9th.
There you go. So a month and 3 days. Are you going to have a party?
I'm actually thinking of planning a book and sticker giveaway on social media and through my newsletter. But that's something I need to get my shit together, Christine.
I carry both your stickers on my laptop all year round. So they're there. I'm doing your promo. And not that I
thank
care.
You. Thank
not,
you.
Not that my laptop leaves the house very much lately, but you know,
if I it mean, wants to. Take what I can get.
We will push it out with this podcast. So yes, in conclusion to this wonderful episode, before I ask you for some last words, Steph's book's going to be in the description. Go and buy it. If you've already bought hers, buy mine, or vice versa. Regardless, let's buy some books.
Right. Read both of them. Yes.
And if you don't want to read them, that's fine. Just buy the books. We can just add one to this.
I know. Buy the books. Leave some reviews on Amazon and Goodreads.
Exactly. Do all the
things. I mean, you could write them on one and then copy and paste it to the other one.
They're quite similar. I mean, I feel like... Right.
I feel like last year I was like, also buy Emily Nagoski's book. But this year, I guess you could also buy the handbook for A Post-Roe America.
There you go.
This year's book recommendation.
And to be fair, this she came out with Burnout Nagoski since then. So if you
haven't checked out. She came out with Burnout, and she also came out with a companion workbook to Come As You Are.
Yes, she did.
So there's so many books you can buy. You could lump them all in one order.
Yes, it will be your sex order of the month. You That's have enough right. toys.
I mean, and it's perfect books. Because this is what? Sexual Health Awareness Month. So this there is the go. Best time.
The best time to select all these orders.
Exactly.
There you go. Last words. What do you want to leave everyone with this week?
Last words. If you are left with a hole in your life... I just want to say that everyone should give themselves space to not have to be like accomplishing all of the things all of the time.
Yes.
And if you give yourself room to play with other creative pursuits, like it's going to come back. It's going to come back for you, and you're going to have a lot of fun in the process.
Absolutely. I love that. And this episode comes out on a Friday, so... If you work like 90% of the people, you have a couple days ahead of you to do fun things.
That's right.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Steph, for this other episode. I'm so glad we did this again.
Yeah, thank you. It was fun.
So fun. Yes, click on all the links in the description. Thank you for listening. And give yourself a break. Have some fun.